Ever since the publication of the first Czech translation of Longfellow's Hiawatha in the 1860s, Czechs have had a special affection for the American West. This was always more than just a fantasy about the space and freedom of the open plains. For many Czechs, after centuries under Austrian rule, there was also a somewhat romanticized sense of identity with the fate of Native Americans at the hands of white settlers. So it is not surprising that when scouting gained popularity at the time of the first Czechoslovak Republic, it took on many symbols associated with the American Indian. As David Vaughan reports, a major role in this process was played by the writer Ernst Thompson Seton, one of the pioneers of scouting in the United States, who visited Czechoslovakia in 1936. David Vaughan has the story.
This is the last of a series of programs that I've been making in cooperation with journalism students from the Anglo-American University, working from the Czech Radio Archives. This time the starting point is a recording of Ernst Thompson Seton, a talk that he gave for Czechoslovak radio during his 1936 stay in Prague. The visit was part of what he himself called a peace mission to Europe. Thompson Seton and his wife Julia, who was also a writer, visited several European countries at a time when war was looming.
In days like these, one can accept or assume no higher, better mission than that of peace messenger, a personal messenger of peace and understanding among the nations.
Given that he was one of the most important figures in the history of the scouting movement, Ernst Thompson Seton deserves to be far better remembered. He was also a writer, a pioneer of what today we would call animal fiction, the attempt to tell the story from the point of view of the animal itself. And he would often draw parallels between the hunting down of America's wildlife and the fate of the country's native population. Here in the Czech Republic, he continues to have a loyal following, and his influence is still felt strongly, even among people who have never heard his name. For example, in the particular stress that the Czech scouting movement places on spending as much time as possible in the countryside, or in the continuing tradition of the tramping movement, that also draws from Native American symbols. In 2010, a conference was held here to mark the 150th anniversary of Thompson Seton's birth, and 2 years later, his biography by H. Allan Anderson was published in Czech translation. His visit to Prague in 1936 is also well recorded, and a fragment in that mosaic is the talk that he gave to the radio.
The surest way to achieve understanding is by personal contact and conversation. There is a story told of Charles Lamb with his friend Steele as they sat in their London coffee house. A stranger entered. Lamb glared at him, then growled to Steele, "I hate that man." Steele laughed, "Why, you do not know him. You never even saw him before." Lamb replied in a more reflective tone, "Perhaps that is why I hate him. If I really knew him, I would probably rate him as a jolly good fellow."
Ever since founding his first scout group, the Woodcraft Indians in Connecticut, in 1902, Thompson Seton had been convinced that it was possible to live in harmony with the natural world, and that this also implied living in harmony with each other. His ideas caught on very early in Czechoslovakia, and the first Czech branch of the Woodcraft League was founded as far back as 1922. Its popularity spread, and Thompson Seton's visit to Prague in 1936 drew a good deal of attention. His popularity here was in part due to just the things that brought him into conflict with other central figures in the scouting movement in America, and even with scouting's father, Lord Baden-Powell. Not everyone in the American scouting movement agreed with his focus on American Indian traditions, and his total rejection of militarism was far from Baden-Powell's version of the movement. His pacifism is felt strongly in the talk preserved in the radio archive.
During the Great War, many soldiers were taken prisoners by the opposing army. These prisoners were sent afar into military camps and prisons. They were fed, sheltered, and, if wounded, had medical care. They had, in short, everything but freedom. Incidentally, they and their captors got acquainted. And although they had been taught to hate each other and to seek each other's destruction, they now were subjected to other influences. They got acquainted. They began to understand each other. Understanding ripened into respect, and respect into friendship. There can be no doubt that thousands of lifelong friendships were in that way founded during the war, all evidencing the great principle that understanding is the best remedy for misunderstanding. Of course, such good work would be less expensive and more effectual if brought about by peaceful activities. And this is the wise thought which is back of all such undertakings as international expositions, world tours, Rhodes scholarships, Olympic Games, peace ambassadors, and whatever tends to make travel easy and contact with foreign countries the great privilege within the reach of all that have moderate means. If I may speak of my personal experience and observation, I have never yet known a man to go and live with a foreign nation without wholly reforming his previous concept of them, especially if that appraisal had been unfavorable. Every American student who spent a few years in France or in Germany came back saying, "I have learned to love those French or those Germans now that I understand them." Every Rhodes scholar goes back from Oxford with a new and high appreciation of the old land, and something like affection for its sterling qualities and even its eccentricities. I know of several men who spent years among the Negro tribes of Africa and came back, in each case, with a deep-rooted admiration of these so-called primitives and a real personal affection for many, if not all, of their black acquaintances.
Anglo-American University student Michaela Kostyalova has made a study of the broadcast.
The first half of the speech is talking about tolerance between nations and societies in general, and I concluded that it's why it was broadcasted in the Czechoslovakia those days, because the atmosphere in Europe was very tense in that time. Hitler already had an absolute power for some 2 years. So it was pretty clear that it's quite possible that war is coming. And his speech in general is something like a call for tolerance, and it's very, I would say, uplifted. He used very noble phrases, and if I can quote, he says he's calling for peace and understanding among the nations. He says that the understanding is only remedy for misunderstanding, so he persuades people to get to know each other. And what I found quite interesting, then he mentions students going abroad to get to know people, and he mentions also some of his friends or maybe students, I don't know, who went to Germany and met Germans and became friends, even though there are some dissimilarities, not really understanding among people, they still can respect and tolerate each other. And I think he mentions German on purpose, because those days, if everybody was like kind of against Germans, it would make them feel, yes, really, we need to fight to prove that we are good or something. But so listening to the speech, I think if I had been listening to that those days, I would feel quite happy, like really, it's really uplifting. You feel like, okay, maybe everything's going to be fine at the end. And as long as we know how it actually turned out at the end, it's really paradoxical, and it's not easy to listen to that nowadays.
Part of the tragedy is that scouts in Czechoslovakia ended up being really quite brutally suppressed, both during the German occupation and then by the subsequent communist regime, didn't they?
Yeah, because scout movement is also like kind of ideology, or it developed into ideology. In Czech scout movement, it's called UNAK in Czech, and in their website they say that their main values are fair play, cooperation with others, thoughtfulness towards the environment, relationship to nature, and so on. And these ideals are very democratic, and it's kind of clashes with whatever totalitarianism regime. So, of course, by Nazis, this movement was stopped, and then it happened again in communism.
Anglo-American University student Michaela Kostyalova. A large part of Ernest Thompson Seton's 1936 talk is devoted to his own inspiration, drawn from Native Americans, the people he describes as the great red men of America. To Czech audiences at the time, this would have been both exotic and inspiring, as they stood in the shadow of war.
50-odd years ago, I went west to live on the plains of America in contact with the North American Indians. I was attracted by the glamour that Fenimore Cooper and other romanticists had shed about the red man, and yet I was warned and distrustful because of countless alleged histories of Indians' cruelties, Indian massacres, Indian cold-blooded atrocities. I had to live with them many years and accumulate a library of thousands of records, talk with hundreds of old-timers who knew the truth, before I learned that all of these stories of wickedness and cruelty were pure fabrications, were wicked slanders invented by the white men to justify the invaders in seizing the Indian lands and dispossessing him of all his property, his game, his horses, his liberties, and as well as his home and children. I came at last to the same conclusion as General Miles, Buffalo Bill, and a score of outspoken leaders who assured me that the Indian was the most heroic and noble type the world has ever seen. He was without degrading vice until the white men introduced whiskey, horrible diseases, and the love of money, and would easily have resisted the white invader had he been equipped with the white man's destructive weapons and boundless resources. The highest development of the red man's culture was seen in Peru. We know now that under the Incas, those red men faced and solved all the great economic and social problems that are tormenting us today. We that are troubled over these great issues believe that we can most quietly, quickly get light and practical guidance by studying these methods and results of the great red men of the past. It is with this as my compelling thought and motive that I am going about from land to land, proclaiming the methods and delivering the gospel message of the great red men of America.
Those were the closing words of a talk by the scouting pioneer Ernest Thompson Seton in Prague in 1936. And I hope that in some future program we'll be able to look in some more detail at his continuing influence in this country.